This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Hi everyone, this is Bronwyn Drew, your chair for our member focus session this afternoon. We'll have Louise Pearson as our presenter today. Louise is a social worker in the mental health space, and she's going to come and talk to us a little bit about grief today. What is associated with grief, what to look for, and how to support yourself, and how you might be able to support other dog guide handlers. Hi, Louise.
Sorry, I was trying to work out how to get myself unmuted.
Oh, that's all right. It gets a bit difficult sometimes.
It does, absolutely.
And welcome.
Thank you. I guess that's what I want to start by saying, Bronwyn. Thank you to the Dog Guide Handlers of Australia for asking me to speak to you today. In beginning, I'd like to pay my respects to the elders of the lands on which we meet today. And where I am right now, that's the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. To any elders who might be with us today, past, present, or emerging. I've actually had four dogs myself. In my vocabulary, I talk about guide dogs, because that's to me what they are. Today, out of respect, I'll talk about dog guides, as I'm on your territory. And so in beginning, if we're going to talk about grief and loss, I'll pay my respects to the dogs of my heart who've been my dogs and my guides but gone before me, to Bronze, to Garnet, Zosh, and Voss, with whom I did so very much, and all of them live on in my memory. Now, as Bronwyn said, I'm going to talk for 20 minutes or so and open it up to questions, or we can share stories, whatever else works for people. I'm not going to quote lots of research at you, but I do want to touch lightly on the grief associated with companion animal loss in general and how things are changing a bit there in that space. And then I'm going to highlight some of the ways that grieving your dog guide can complicate things as we grieve. I'm going to talk about some of the ways in which we can help ourselves in that grief process, and just as importantly, how we can support others who are grieving the loss of their dog guide. So in beginning, I guess what I want to also acknowledge is that I know there are a lot of people here today with huge experience and expertise. I'm sure there are people with us who have had several guide dogs, as have I. And there might even be people with us who haven't yet gone through the grief process that I'm going to talk about. So, you know, I guess just to recognise that some of what I'm talking to you about may not be news, and some of you may feel well practiced in grieving a dog guide. I guess I just wanted to add some things to the mix for you. So looking at the idea of companion animal loss, well, maybe the best place to start might be with the definition of what grief is. And put simply, grief is the price we pay for loving someone. It's an experience which is as individual as is your fingerprint. and it can affect you on all different levels. So that might be physically, emotionally, cognitively, spiritually. And another little thing to clarify here is that when I say companion animal, I don't actually mean a service animal. I mean that slowly companion animal is replacing the word pet, because pet can sound a little bit dismissive or diminutive. Slowly, we're starting to see, and research is backing us up, with the knowledge that for some people, animals are indeed companions. People refer to them in my counselling room as being their fur babies, or as their animals being like their children. And if anyone's about to scoff at that, who people value in their lives, who they see as being their nearest and dearest, is in reality as individual as is our grief experience. I personally don't think we have the right to suggest how much or how little someone should grieve. I remember being a counsellor at the Australian Centre for Grief and Bereavement many years ago, and we had someone who was grieving the loss of her cat come in for counselling. Her cat had come with her from another country, and because her parents had died young and the cat died at 19, her cat was actually the longest relationship she'd ever had. So, you know, that just demonstrates what it can be like. The reality is that 2/3 of Australian households have animals at home. And so there's a lot of heartbreak when their lives are over. If you are someone who grieves the loss of a dog guide or another companion animal that you have had, you're in good company. This grief is talked about in books and movies. Some of us may remember the movie Marley and Me. Marley and Me was actually about the life of a dog. But what do we remember about Marley and Me when people talk about it? Often it's the death scene, the grief involved. It's in songs. And, you know, it wasn't in the ones that I listened to over your lunch break today, but some of you here will probably remember the lyrics to this old song, which opens with, "I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you in worn-out shoes." The song goes on to say, "He spoke with tears of 15 years, how his dog and him travelled about. The dog up and died. He up and died. After 20 years, he still grieves." So a part of the problem here is that while what I am saying is that death related to the loss of an animal can for some people be akin to losing a partner or a child, society still doesn't quite give it that recognition. Society has a lot of rules about who it's okay to grieve for, how long it should take for you to get on with life. And sadly, with dogs, many people expect that it's something we move through in days or weeks. Of course, if you moved through your partner or your child's loss that quickly, you'd be seen as unfeeling. So we've decided on a sort of hierarchy of grief and not taken into consideration the fact that some people see their dogs as family members. Now, the issue with that lack of recognition for the loss that someone has sustained is that when people around you don't recognise your loss, you don't get the support and the validation you need at the time of the loss. People might send a text or two and say, "Oh, that's sad," when they hear the news, but they don't send cards or flowers generally. They don't pop over with a casserole or just show up and say, "What can I do?" Recently, an example of this from my current work, I am a grief and bereavement counsellor part of the time, but I also work in the NDIS space. And in the same week, someone's grandfather died. She was a young woman of 23, and immediately flowers were sent. Someone went out and bought a book, and we had a present for her, and everyone was very, very tentative and careful about what we said because her grandfather had died. In the same week, another colleague lost her dog, who was 16 and very much a part of the family. And I'd been away sick myself and got the news late. And when I read the email about it, I said to a colleague, "Oh my goodness, oh, Erin's dog, oh dear." And I'm racing straight into email mode and seeing what I could do. And my colleague looked back at me and said, "Yeah, it's a bit sad, isn't it? Do you want to come for coffee, Lou?" My point, I guess. So when a dog guide's life comes to an end, there are a whole range of other things to take into consideration. Now, I did say I wouldn't quote research at you, and I'm not going to do that. But these are just some of the things that I see that can possibly make grieving that loss difficult. If you're lucky, your dog hasn't died. He or she is moving on from his dog guiding days and hopefully going to a happy home somewhere else. Well, while that might be true, just giving over the leash into someone else's hands and keeping can feel like a betrayal. What are we saying? "Oh, well, boss, you've given me your best years. Now you're old and grey and slowing me down. You're no use to me anymore." Also, however well you've chosen the next home for your dog, if you are anything like me, you're going to be questioning yourself. Will they look after him as well as I would have? Will they have him vaccinated? Have him to the vets when needed? Will he be warm and feel loved? Will he be happy there? What will I be able to do if he's not? And while, you know, people tend to say, "Oh yes, dogs are just," when I gave up my last dog, Voss, his new owners told me 2 years later that for the first 6 months, every night without fail, he went and sat at the front door, hoping that I would come back. On the flip side of those questions, you might even find yourself feeling some jealousy if you hear that he's actually settling in quite well. Perhaps the bigger part of you might be feeling that it's great that he's happy in his new home. But there might be another tiny part of you that's hard for you to admit it to even to yourself, which is saying, "Don't forget about me. Don't forget about the work we did together and the fun we had." Another question that you might find yourself plagued with is, how will he feel about being replaced? How will he cope with seeing me with a new dog? What a way to pay him out after the work he's done for me. Do I believe that nonsense about dogs not being emotional beings, not caring, not knowing? Well, I think I've just told you, haven't I? Not on your life. To me, that's just some twaddle that someone came up with to comfort themselves. And speaking of replacement, just the idea of working with a replacement can be a grief for us as one team breaks and another one comes into being. Not all of us have the capacity to say, as your average companion animal owners might have. I think I'm now ready for a new dog. In fact, for me, working two jobs and living the lifestyle that I do, I pray for a smooth transition, that I can pass over the leash one day and welcome a new dog home tomorrow. Because without a dog guide, my life is seriously inconvenienced. I personally don't do the whole white cane thing. And so then, having just dealt with the heartbreak of releasing that leash, I'm faced with a puppy who is, in the case of my latest dog, Arthur, for example, bouncy and delighted with life, but doesn't know me from Eve, and certainly doesn't think I'm special. Anyone out there who hasn't done it before, let me tell you something for nothing. It's not easy. You miss the knowledge and the routines that you and your previous dog had down pat. You're getting used to new idiosyncrasies, having perhaps to get used to food rewards again for the dog who finds you a light pole. And just to add to that, general life hasn't stopped while all this is happening. So to me, the idea of second dog syndrome is a real one. If you're like me and love dogs as I do, I think it's a tiny bit easier. You soon start to see the beauty in the new dog, but it can be a hard transition. And it's one you're usually going through while you experience some grief for your past dog. I think that's worth flagging. But now, just take a step back to a minute or two ago when I said, if you're lucky. Sometimes our dogs can become ill and die during their working life and not make it to retirement age. That means that we are then dealing with the trauma of a sudden death, as well as scrambling to work out the practicalities of our lives without a dog guide, like how are we going to get to work tomorrow or how are we going to get the shopping done. I lost my second dog, Garnet, in this way, and for me, it was soul-destroying. One day he was with me, guiding me to work, and the next, I was sitting with his puppy razor next to me and Garnet lay dying in my lap. Another thing to think about is that if you're a dog guide handler, you're often well known in your community. People know of your dog, and sometimes you're dealing with other people's grief and trying to comfort them as you go through it yourself. One other time that can be particularly hard, and again will often go unrecognised, is when that dog whose leash you handed over a few years ago to go to his new home actually dies. I've been there with three of my four dogs, so I've been lucky. But sometimes you're not allowed to be there. He's, after all, not your dog anymore. With my fourth dog, who perhaps never really settled happily into his new life, I was told after the event and could do nothing. And so at that time, you might be surprised that the grief train comes screaming out of a nearby tunnel and knocks you well and truly off the tracks just by hearing the sad news that that dog's life is over. So if these are some of the extra layers that we as dog guide handlers have to deal with as we grieve, then I guess the question is, how do we help ourselves? Now, I think that one of the most important things is to recognise your feelings as valid. Whatever other people say, for you, they're not just a dog, they were your dog. And you might find that, like when you lose anyone you love in the beginning, you'll be stunned by just how much it takes out of you. As I said, grief affects us in so many different ways. You might find yourself unable to control your tears. You might be feeling exhausted or listless. You might be wanting to talk about your loss all the time, or not wanting to talk much at all. And one other thing to remember, grief doesn't come in stages. It's not linear. You might have your worst day 3 months after the death, not 3 days. I think Mrs. Kubler-Ross, who's very famous for her stages of grief, has never quite been vindicated, because what she was talking about was the stages that people go through when they find out that they might be dying. But people have taken her denial, anger, bargaining, acceptance. No, I missed one out. Depression, acceptance to heart, and say, that's how you move through the stages. You don't. It's not linear. You can have all gamuts of emotions at all times, moving backwards and forwards through them. But what to do? I guess what I suggest firstly is that you do some of the things that soothe you when you're sad or distressed. Play music. Write in your journal. Talk to someone who you feel understands. Think of your happy memories of that dog. If you can see photos, videos, whatever. I sometimes write a piece in my journal about all the things that have happened with that dog in my life. Also, think about your belief system. For you, is there a life after death? Are there dogs in heaven? For me, if there's no dogs in heaven, I don't want to go. When you truly love someone, that love doesn't go away because they're no longer in your life. When you lose anyone close, be they friend or family member, human, dog, you mightn't have their physical presence with you anymore, but you'll always take the relationship that you have with them forward wherever you go. A lot of people even talk about how they'll feel like the presence around them, even though they're not here anymore. Whereas we used to say that we had to leave that person behind us and that that was the object of grief. Now, in the grief circles, we talk about the continuing bond that we have with someone who's died. This is a death you have experienced. And what I can tell you for sure is that no one alive today can tell you definitively what happens after death. For me, there is definitely a life after this one. So I tend to say of my four dogs who have died that, like in the old Irish song, Back Home in Derry, my comrades' ghosts walk behind me. So, you know, the other thing I say to all my dogs as they pass is, wait for me before the bridge. I won't be checking in anywhere without you when I come through. But as I've already said, grief is individual. So you do, you believe what works for you. I also try and set myself up with some rituals to mark the end of my dog's working lives, to recognise my own grief and celebrate what they've done for me. The friends of Voss gathered at my home for a party, for example, on the night before I handed him over. Zosh, my third dog, had a party put on by the staff at work, and staff from all departments came, like they usually didn't for farewell functions. There were upwards of 100 people there and so, so many presents to send him on his way. They were supporting me in my grief. They were expressing their own grief. And frankly, Zosh was delighted with all of the fuss. One of the things that I've also done for two of my dogs is to buy plaques in the Honour Garden at Guide Dogs Victoria. Now, I'm not sure if Cedar has one of those, but you can do anything you like, really. You could plant a tree. For my second dog, Garnet, who died while still a working dog, we made a CD called In Memory of Garnet and put all the sad songs on it. I found it just the other day as I'm packing up my house. What we also know is that any kind of grief works better with the support of those who understand. So support groups are a fantastic source of support for people. And where are we today with the Dog Guide Handlers of Australia? No, not everyone will grieve as you do. I'm sure some people are rolling their eyes at the content of this talk and wishing me to kingdom come. That's okay. Find someone who thinks like you and talk about your dog and the pain you're experiencing to your heart's content. And I have to say also, if you're not coping, if you feel like you should be, and like no one gets you, then go and see a counsellor. You have the right to be supported as you go through this loss. I often think one of these days in my spare time, I'm going to run a support group for those who are bereaved after the loss of a guide dog, dog guide. You know, and I guess it might be in any stage, because as I've said, sometimes it's not actually their death, but we're still mourning their presence in our lives. And I'd like to finish by saying a few brief words to those of us who are trying to offer support to someone who is grieving the loss of their dog guide. Remember that while you may have lived through the loss of your dogs, the experience is actually not the same. So I think if you take anything forward from today, remember this: grief is as individual as is your fingerprint. And you grieve how you grieve, not how someone expects you to. The same can be said for the person you are supporting. They grieve as they grieve. If you're trying to empathise and really show your understanding, let me also say, as Brené Brown did when she talked of what empathy is, empathy doesn't usually begin with an at least. At least you had one of the best. At least you had him for 9 years. At least he didn't suffer. At least he's going to a good home. These are all things that people have said to me. Sit and think about it. Do you usually find those at leasts helpful when someone says them to you? More often than not, I think that they are actually about us. They are said because we're scrambling to know what to do with someone's pain. So we offer them an at least. Another thing. Listen to understand, not to respond. Often as we listen, someone is talking and we're thinking about what we can add to the conversation. We all do it, but we're not really listening when we do that. Let the person tell their story before you start thinking about where you want to go from there. Check in with them and ask them what they need. Sometimes you'll get it wrong. We all do. But at least they'll feel your intention to provide support. Show up with the casserole, the chocolate, a bottle of wine, a hug. Above all, be there. Sometimes there are no words. And in that instance, as Ronan Keating once said in a song, you say it best when you say nothing at all. Thanks for having me. I'd like to turn it over to see if we have questions or people want to talk about their experiences or I guess whatever we'd like to do with the time from here on in, Bronwyn.
Thanks, Louise, and that was a great presentation. I'm sure there's many handlers that have gone through different emotions with their dogs, whether it be having to retire them early for whatever reason. A lot of people probably think, oh, no, I'm not grieving, but
yeah,
some way you are.
Oh, yeah.
If anyone wants to share their story or ask a question of Louise, if you'd like to put your hand up. Erica, is there anything in chat?
Really, the comments in chat were more along the lines of, well, you know, we've been talking about second dog syndrome and retiring dogs of a certain older age. It also can be an issue with dogs that you've been provided with but you didn't bond with. The matching process was not successful and you had to hand the dog back. And those feelings and emotions are very much the same. And the other comment that was in the chat was about talking stones, which is a nice memorial that you can have at home. They're like engraved stones that you can place in your garden and it's there for you every day when you need it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Erica. You know, because pet loss, companion animal loss, that they're talking about it as now is sort of starting to really ramp up a bit and people are starting to see, you know, you can do things like, you know, there are some vets that will come and put the dog or euthanize the dog in your home. There are services where they'll take the dog away and bring them back cremated. And these are all things that, you know, I mean, some people will find helpful.
There's no other questions or hands up at the moment, Bronwyn.
No worries. Thanks for that, Erica.
We've silenced everyone.
We have. pretty heavy session, really, for the mind, and probably a lot of thinking going on and whatnot. So and as you touched on with second dog syndrome, it can be a very difficult thing, and I have heard stories of people who don't necessarily suffer it with their when they receive their second dog. It can be further down the track with their third or their fifth dog, and as you touched on, because the next dog isn't as you left your previous dog, so
yes, exactly.
Having to go back and learning teaching those your way of life to your new dog guide. And it is something I know I was made aware of. I'm only a first-time handler. I was made very aware of at the very beginning because of how well my dog and I bonded and we do things and we with our training. I have been warned you will probably suffer second dog syndrome with your next dog. So it is something I know to be aware of, and hopefully other organisations and trainers have said that to their clients whilst in the training phases.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, that the whole thing is I think that, you know, it's something to be aware of, and you might not be, you know, you might be okay with it. And that's the thing, I guess. I wasn't in this talk trying to say that, you know, everyone's going to grieve and it's going to be a heavy subject for everyone. But I think when you are feeling really hit by the grief train and feeling unseen, that's when it can be really difficult. So it's not necessarily that we have to experience things as terrible. But it's more that if we do, that the sort of there seems to be some support gained by people who actually think, you know, well, yep, I'm not that strange. I'm not that different to other people. It is a hard time.
That's right. That's right. And as you said, everyone grieves differently and they may not recognise it as grief either. So it is something to be aware of. And I'm sure your talk today has enlightened many people.
John Gosling has his hand up and he'd like to put in a comment, and Stuart also has his hand up.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Erica. John, if you'd like to go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you. I've done that and I hope it's been successful. Can you tell me whether you're hearing me okay?
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you.
Super. Just wanted to say, Lou, that I thought that was a superb presentation. So
thank
practical
you.
And so understanding and so empathetic to the total the structure of what all people might experience at time of this loss. A couple
thank
of
you.
Points that came up through it is that one where people have needed to return their dog. They did a study in Guide Dogs UK in the 1980s, and it was a doctor by the name, and that was a psychiatrist, Jill Nicholson. You can see her study, and she found that 25% of the dogs coming back was through this, what was seen to be failure, and to some extent, you know, that can be spread across not only the person, because this is often what happened, is the person blames themselves, the handler blames themselves. But really, the organisations as well need to be accountable and to have a review process where they have a really good look at it to see, well, where has it gone, and do this in a collaboration with the handler. It's not trying to apportion blame, but it's just trying to understand and not to leave the handler feeling, well, there's one failure, I hope I don't have another one, you know, it's terrible. The other part of it is, I think your presentation would be essential listening for people in the dog guide profession to be listening to and have discussions about during their professional education. One of the courses that I found most effective was at Monash University, which was at the to do with the companion animal bereavement, and
yes,
learned so much about that, and it will become more and more an issue into the future as we as a society we become more dependent and interdependent with dogs or animals and canaries. It can be whatever, it's whatever the person perceives that is a loss about, to be remembering that. And I think that for people who are in the profession, that one of the aspects to that I know as an educator always think of is to never be judgmental. You know, this might be the best dog in the world from your point of view, but, you know, to have an appreciation and understanding of the dog previous is so important. And the dog and the person will find their own way with this. The word we use, we like to use, is successor dog, because no dog can be replaced. You've got your whole wholesome or challenging or otherwise relationship with each of your dogs, and for the one that's coming on, they're just picking up the baton and pushing on with you. So comments more than anything else, Lou, but I thought that was super.
Thank you. I love that, successor dog. I'm going to remember that one.
Well, the comments are flooding in, which, you know, people can read in their own good time. I think we could probably get Stuart's question in, but probably not Kirsten's.
Yeah, no worries. Stuart, if you'd like to unmute yourself.
Did you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Good. I just wanted to say I found the talk on grief extremely helpful. I'm privileged to still have my second guide dog or dog guide. My first one died prematurely. Mm-hmm. And Harley from Guide Dogs is 13 and Omar from Seeing Eye Dogs is 3. last month. And I was very apprehensive about what Harley would think about the new dog. And I'm pleased to say that they're both golden retrievers, and there has been a great transfer, and I think Harley's very happy to be retired. And Omar, who's quite a deal heavier than Harley, is very gentle with Harley. And the really hard part, the part I find now, is seeing Harley age and become more and more feeble. His life, I believe, has been extended by the fact that Omar came here, and he seems to have been rejuvenated. And I thought he might have passed away this time last year. But the really hard part for me is just seeing him gradually deteriorate.
Yeah, I can well understand that. I've seen it in one of my dogs went to my parents, Stuart, and I saw, you know, exactly that. And it's very difficult to witness, isn't it?
Yes, I just thought I'd pass that on, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Stuart. And thank you again, Louise. A wonderful, wonderful presentation, and I hope our members have taken something out of it.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website, www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?